Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello and welcome once again to another episode of Patented. It's a podcast about the history of inventions, the beginnings of technology, the origins of things, brought to you by History Hit. I'm your host, Dallas Campbell. Thank you for your company. Hey, today's episode, I'm delighted to say, has been suggested by one of you, lovely listeners.
Hi, my name is Adam. I live near Baltimore, Maryland in the US and have been listening to Patented since the very beginning. And I'd love to see you do an episode on keyboards, which are something that we now use all the time for doing pretty much everything. They've been around forever in lots of different shapes and sizes. And I think the perfect person to talk about it would be Marcin Vahari, who just wrote a huge book on keyboards and their history. I think it'd be a fantastic conversation. Thanks.
Dreams can come true, Adam. Oh, yes, they can. Because today's episode is not only about the story of keyboards, but my guest today is Marcin Vahari. So, Adam and the rest of you, prepare yourself for a treat as we dive in to the story of the keyboard. Now, if you think about your keyboard, it is so central to all of our lives. It's almost become invisible. We use our keyboards all the time on our phones and our computers. Or if you're a hipster, your typewriter, we use our phones to write our epic novels and our screenplays, or you would use your thumbs on your phone to text your friend that you're running late. Perhaps you're really struggling to write a draft of a new job application or writing a difficult email. Whatever it is, the keyboard is central to the way that we communicate in the modern world. So get ready to hear all the stories of the keyboard, the invention of QWERTY 150 years ago, the famous attempt to kill off QWERTY by Dvorak, not the composer, about the ZX Spectrum, which, if you're my age, you remember, and its annoying little rubbery keys, and the shift key. Where did that come from? There's all kinds of extraordinary stories that are lurking underneath those keys that we take for granted. If you enjoy this chat with Marcin, then don't forget he has got a book coming out. It's called Shift Happens. It's on Kickstarter right now, and there's a link to it in the episode description. It's great, and it's full of these odd, unusual stories about the keyboard that we tap away on all day. Enjoy the show. Marcin, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you with us. You're joining us from Chicago, the Windy City.
Yes, very sunny today, actually.
Is it? Well, it's sunny here in London too, so there we go. Hey, listen, I'm just as we're talking about keyboards, I mean, we should point out computer keyboards we're talking about primarily. I'm having a war with my keyboard at the moment. The H on my Mac, I've got a MacBook Pro, and the keyboard's on it's terrible. Like, it keeps the H on it. Every time I hit it, it does two H's. It makes me crazy.
Is this the infamous butterfly keyboard?
That's exactly what it is, yeah. The butterfly keyboard. Do you know about this? And they seem to know about it, but there's nothing I can do. Apparently, I'm stuck with it.
It's actually interesting for me because if you look at Apple's history with keyboards, it's actually kind of boring, you know? Like Apple has all of these interesting devices, you know, they innovated a lot. And if you look at their keyboard history, there's one interesting keyboard that's Apple adjustable in the mid-90s is this split keyboard. And then nothing after that. And the next experimentation was the one that you're talking about, which is something that it's actually worked very well.
It's really, really annoying. And I wouldn't mind if it was like a cheap computer, like, okay, fine. But it's a MacBook Pro and I spend a lot of money on it and it makes my head hurt. Anyway. Actually, you say Apple have only had one. I remember my friend Will used to have, I think it was called an Apple Newton. It's like a thing you put in your palm, like a kind of palm-held device, and it had like four buttons on it, and the combination of buttons, yeah, three buttons, would spell out words. But again, I think it was so rubbish that it didn't really catch on. But I remember playing with it.
There's this history of sort of one-hand devices, which actually harkens back even all the way to like 19th century, where somebody built this, like, I think it was called permutational typographer. It was a typewriter you could hide in your pocket. And it was supposed to be like writing down everyday observations without anybody noticing. So that thing, just this desire to, yeah, kind of quietly write something down, maybe a little secretly, has always been with us, right? And I think the maybe the one you're referring to was also a version of that. Maybe it's for spies or some.
Okay, this is a nice little preamble into today's chat. Origins of keyboards. Oh, is there such a thing as that? What was the first keyboard? Like, was the first typewriter the first keyboard? Or the laying out of keys to communicate? How far back can we go?
That's interesting because, you know, there's always everything we have in a history, there's always a debate what's first. And often it's just a question of like what adjectives you put in between first and the word, right? So like first commercial typewriter, first electronic computer, etc., etc. So, you know, there've been attempts to do something like a typewriter for, I think, centuries before what I would consider the first proper keyboard, the first proper typewriter, but they were just, you know, one-offs. They were not, maybe the technology wasn't quite there yet. So, you know, there are different countries in Europe that claim the first typewriter and they all probably okay claims. But I think for me, the one that really started it all is the one that's going to celebrate its 150th anniversary later this year, which is the first QWERTY keyboard attached to the was called Scholz and Glidden and eventually the Remington typewriter, because it was the first one that actually was manufactured at scale and really the first one that led to every keyboard after that, right? Like pretty much every keyboard after that. Like you could grab the person who invented it, move them in time to today from 1867, sit them in front of a computer and they would know what to do.
So the first typewriter, because I always, maybe it's an urban myth, but I always thought that the reason that QWERTY typewriters exist is to stop the keys jamming, because they're frequently used letters or least frequently used letters. Maybe can you just sort of clear that story up, like QWERTY? What the hell? Why have we got QWERTY? What's the function of that?
Yeah, a lot of debate through the years. And, you know, the tricky part is we might never fully know, because they ran this little company like almost like you would run a startup today. They wouldn't write anything down. There was no blog. They were just like doing things. They would patent what they had to patent, but not too much because, you know, patenting things is also disclosing things to competition. First of all, QWERTY was actually very intentional and very thoughtful. It wasn't just a random hodgepodge of letters. It was there to actually allow people to type fast and to solve a particular set of technical problems. But it wasn't to, you know, a lot of people say slow people down. It was actually the opposite. The combination of the letters was rearranged so that you didn't have to slow down.
When you say rearranged, that assumes there must have been something beforehand. So were keyboards just laid out in alphabetical order?
Or exactly, yeah. So the first actually prototype even of this keyboard used a piano keyboard because that was the only keyboard that was available. And it was alphabetical because that was the layout that made sense, right? Like that's a starting point.
How do you mean it was a typewriter would look like a piano or the piano would... Well, I suppose it's the same sort of thing with the piano. I've got one behind me there.
Yeah.
You know, you press a key and a hammer hits a note. And so with a typewriter, a hammer hits a letter on a bit of ribbon and a bit of paper.
Exactly. It's actually kind of strange. We should be calling keyboards button boards because they're not keyboards. Like the keyboard is the musical keyboard. The word key comes from music. Right?
Is that why we call keyboards keyboards? Because it comes...
Yeah, at least that's the hypothesis, right?
Oh, I love that.
So at some point they realized two things. One is... the piano keyboard is not as good because, you know, you're not chording the letters, you're not kind of, you just do one at a time. So buttons are better. And the second thing they realize is the arrangement can be better because the alphabetical thing is not very helpful. But you can still see the, if you look at the middle row of your keyboard today, it's mostly alphabetical. So they just move things around enough so people could move faster. But there are still traces of the alphabet there.
There is. That's okay. I'm just looking at my listener. I'm just looking at my keyboard now. Maybe you're looking at your keyboard if you're on your laptop. So the middle letters A, S, D, F, G, H, J, K, L. I'd never even, honestly, I just thought it was kind of random. I mean, I knew about QWERTY, the first letters. But that, after that, in my brain, it's just randomness. But it's not randomness. There's history in there. There's history in...
And people actually analyzed this in terms of statistics and mathematics, and they said, no, it was... There's a lot of intentionality there. And probably the reason why keyboards work so well, like you could type really fast on even the first keyboard, and that was before touch typing was invented, because that was also coming later. Like touch typing, somebody invented touch typing.
What do we mean by touch typing? Is that just typing fast?
It's, you know, depending on the definition, I think it's using 9 or 10 fingers without looking at the keyboard and like allowing the keyboard. And that's the whole beauty of typing and the keyboards is how well they work with human brain, like how incredibly amazing fingers are at interacting with a keyboard, how amazing motor memory is. So basically touch typing allows you to put the entire keyboard in your motor memory and then just don't think about typing. Right. You can think about what you're actually writing. You can think about who you're talking to. I could be typing right now and still talking to you. And motor memory is just beautiful in and of itself.
Do we know who invented the QWERTY keyboard? Do we know, is there someone who thought, okay, I've got to redesign this because...
So the sort of the main person who is credited for this typewriter that we're talking about is Christopher Latham Sholes. He had helpers. You know, he was a little bit kind of like a dreamer. He was actually one of the early people who hated QWERTY and tried to reinvent QWERTY, even though he created QWERTY. So he had a few more sort of pragmatic partners that would help him bring that typewriter to market. But basically, yeah, this was the person who just spent, you know, 7 or something years working on this wild invention and actually managed to bring it to market.
So what's his name's Christopher Latham, is that his name?
Yeah, Sholes is his last name, yeah.
Christopher Latham Sholes. Who was he and how did he get this idea? Like, how did he work out QWERTY? Like, what was the thinking behind? I mean, I know the thinking, but why those... How did he chance upon those letters?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, he had some experience in printing before. He did this device to help paginate things. So there was like a little counter that you could print 2 on one page and then print 3 on the next page and then print 4 and do this semi-automatically, right? So I think there were some kernels of these ideas sort of in his head. Another, like the whole inspiration, the first prototype of his keyboard or his typewriter was a Morse keyer, you know, the Morse, like, Morse code and Morse buttons existed before. So he sort of connected a letter from the printing press with a Morse key and make it swing toward the paper. And honestly, you know, there were other typewriters around. As they were working on this typewriter, they learned from reading newspapers that other people were also working on other typewriters, right? So it was, this idea was floating around and he was just the person who, you know, maybe was at the right place at the right time. Maybe surrounded himself with the right people. Maybe he just spent enough time making it happen. Or maybe, as it often happens in keyboard history and technology history, he picked the right battles, right? Like he said, I'm going to focus on the printing quality. I'm going to focus on the ease of use. And maybe his competitors focus on other things that ended up not being as important.
It's just interesting that this was invented, you know, so long ago at the birth of typing. And yet, and nothing's changed. I mean, nothing fundamental has changed in terms of the order. No one's thought, okay, we can do something better. There is nothing better. We've tried, because there's other layouts. People have tried other layouts. As we mentioned earlier, the weird Apple Newton palm thing. But things like, is it Dvorak? I seem to remember that.
So that's that whole interesting story, which is depending on whom you ask, there were many keyboards that were better.
Oh, okay.
But we don't know, right? The word better is so overloaded, right? Because so we have Dvorak, who's probably like the most famous example of somebody saying QWERTY is trash, right? We need to do better. He called it a primitive torture board, you know, and he had the entire book telling why his layout is better. And on the surface, it feels like it is, right? He said, like, your fingers move less, the letters are arranged better, the combination of like sort of two fingers moving around. He had charts and graphs and it was great.
Tell us what it is actually, just for so our listeners can picture what we're talking about.
Yeah, so it's basically the same form factor as a typewriter or a keyboard, except the letters are rearranged. So, you know, the first row doesn't spell QWERTY. Basically, the gist is that the most common letters are under your fingertips in a resting position. The most common ones are vowels, so they're mostly there on under your right hand. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's rearranged so your fingers travel less. That was the whole principle. So in theory, your fingers traveling less means you can move faster. But the funny thing is that there were two things. One is, I think I would posit that the QWERTY is actually good enough for most people. Like, especially now that we all do casual typing, there are very few professional typists, right? Very few people who type for 10 or 11 hours a day, which used to be the case a century ago.
But even writers, I mean, like professional writers, I mean, I've written a book and I at no point writing my book did I go, crikey, I wish someone would redesign the typewriter layout. It's fine. And I know people sort of moan about it. Can I just before we move on, I just want to Dvorak. Am I pronouncing it right? Is it Dvorak you pronounce it or Dvorak?
So from what I understand, there's a composer called Dvořák. And
that's
then
Dvořák
there's
Dvořák as a New World Symphony.
And then there's the scientist called Dvorak. Even though they're related, their branches of their family chose to pronounce their names different ways.
And why is it called, why was that layout called Dvorak, if I'm pronouncing it right? And just give us the name of the person who designed
it. Yeah, so August Dvorak was the person who spent in the 1930s and 1940s, like a big amount of effort in promoting his layout through, you know, lectures, through writing his book. It was called Typewriting Behavior. But I think like one thing that he didn't realize, and I think what maybe Scholes did well 50 years before, was that it's not just you have to have a good layout. There's marketing involved, there's promotion, there's building the keyboard.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of other things that have to happen to put the keyboard on the market. And that's sort of like sometimes a challenge of being an inventor, right?
This is all technology and invention. It's, well, you know, it's 99% inspiration. No, 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration.
Exactly.
But it's you know, people like, you know, Edison's the famous one. He could market himself. That was the thing. Elon Musk knows how to market himself, I suppose, whatever you think
and,
of these people.
You know, whether you see it as inspiring or depressing, I don't know. It's up to you. But my argument is like, QWERTY is not perfect, but I think for a lot of us, it's actually good enough. And we shouldn't hate it for being like, you know, we stuck with it for 150 years. Maybe there's a room to celebrate it a little bit as like a really, really interesting invention.
We'll be back after this short break.
On Gone Medieval from History Hit, we set out to solve the biggest mysteries of the Middle Ages.
So many of these travellers who went out looking for Prester John, what did they think they were hearing?
We explore cutting-edge research.
Genetic signatures found in present-day Jewish populations were shared by the genetic ancestries we found.
From everyday life to dynasty-shattering events.
It's a time when all the major Viking raids have started, which as Christians they think of as vengeance from heaven.
And reveal the answers to centuries-old riddles.
I stand up straight in a bed, I'm hairy at my base, and I make the ladies cry. The solution is an onion.
I'm Dr. Kat Jarman.
And I'm Matt Lewis.
Every Tuesday and Saturday, we'll explore some of the biggest stories, the greatest mysteries, and latest research.
Listen and follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Actually, I was thinking about it. You know, we talk about typewriters. Typing on something like a MacBook Pro laptop is so different than it is typing on like an old-fashioned typewriter. I mean, the amount of movement you have to go from your finger to actually make a keystroke is like kind of sort of 2 inches. I remember playing on my mum's old typewriter when I was a kid. Chink, 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 chink. And then I remember when the ZX Spectrum came out. Jesus. And it had those kind of like rubbery keys, and it was just awful, almost as bad as my butterfly thing on my MacBook Pro. The Spectrum, yeah. Do you remember the Spectrum keyboard?
Yeah, that actually made it. I'm originally from Poland, and it was actually a thing in Poland, probably owing to its cheapness. But yeah, I have an entire chapter dedicated to ZX Spectrum in my
book. Really?
Oh,
okay, good.
Yeah, because it is a very interesting keyboard, right? It is, on one hand, kind of hated, right? It is a keyboard that people say, you know, it's like typing on dead flesh, you know? It's just like incredibly exactly unpleasant. But I actually got to interview Rick Dickinson, who used to work with Clive Sinclair, thank you. He designed, you know, the ZX80, ZX81, and then the incredibly influential ZX Spectrum. And yes, the keyboard was cheap, but it was cheap for a reason. And, you know, as we all probably know, and people of a certain age probably recognize, that ZX Spectrum just basically created an entire industry in the UK of computer literacy. And it's sold in millions of units, which was unprecedented for, it's still like one of the highest selling computers in history.
It was massive. And it's interesting because the keys, they weren't just letters. I mean, you were never going to type War and Peace on a Sinclair ZX Spectrum. Although I say that, I did.
Somebody did, probably.
No, I did my dissertation at university on a ZX Spectrum. However many thousand words that was. Again, it was my friend Will's mum, Will, who I was talking about. Just said, Will, it was Will's mum. Spectrum. Anyway.
You know, it was also like, in a way, kind of beautiful. And I know a lot of people will just like roll their eyes right now listening to it. But, you know, you could take ZX Spectrum today and put it on your shelf, and it's still a beautifully designed object with the right colors and the proportions. And, you know, I asked actually Rick Dickinson, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. I asked him, you know, looking at it right now, what would you have changed? You know, and I expected he would say like, oh, I would add a spacebar, I would add a proper mechanical keys. And he said, nothing. All of the decisions we made were there for a reason. You could say that this computer was cheap, but it was also affordable. I was astonished how he was just like, no, it needed to be that, and it was that. And the fact that people added, you know, other keyboards on top of it just to make it better, sure, that makes sense. But most people just used it, and I think that was important to them. And it was something very, very kind of interesting in that.
It's a really good philosophy, isn't it? You know, sometimes things are just right at the right time, and obviously things are different now, but It's a good way of looking at the world. And this idea of perfection is a mug's game, trying to get perfection. But perfect is not what you want. You just want good enough.
You could get ZX Spectrum that was perfect, and it would be used by 8.5 people, and it would amount to nothing.
Can I ask you about some keys, actually? Just thinking about, you know, just when you were talking about the Spectrum there, I'm sure there are kind of reasons why some keys, like, for example, the shift key.
Yeah.
Like, who invented the actually, on my Mac, it doesn't even say shift anymore. There's just like it's just got like an arrow pointing up. It's really, but I'm sure it used to say shift.
Yeah.
What does shift mean?
So Shift, you know, so there was Shift is an interesting key. So my book is called Shift Happens in recognition that Shift was like the first battle after typewriters were invented. We're talking like late 19th century. You know, the very first typewriters were all uppercase because that was technologically simple to do, right? We see it over and over again. Early computers were also all uppercase. Early texting was also all uppercase. That's usually how we start and then we add lowercase. So they, you know, they tried to figure out how to make lowercase and uppercase happen. And there were different manufacturers trying different things. Some of them would put lowercase keys as separate keys. You know, they would say, it's just the next key, right? You want uppercase A, you press this one. You want lowercase A, you press something else that's somewhere else. And those keyboards were a little bit bigger, but they were like clear and it was easy to understand them. And some other inventors had this idea of like, what if we, you know, you have a type bar that has a letter that swings towards the paper. What if we put two letters on it and we shift it up and down just to target one of them? So if you look sort of like, if you look up at the mechanism of how typewriter works, it's kind of ingenious and beautiful. And then you have this key that shifts the type bars or shifts the basket up and down. And that's where the name comes from. And then there were some manufacturers who said like, well, we could do more than one shift, right? We could do two, three letters on the type bar or four letters on the type bar.
Why are there two shift buttons? Is that just for ease of use? Is that because depending whether you're right-handed or left-handed or...
Yeah. So I think eventually what happened was they learned that the perfect combination between like technological complexity, because the more shifts you add, the more complex the keyboard gets, right? Like you look at your keyboard today, you have control, you have option, you have command, you have a globe, you have function. It's just like a lot going on, right?
I don't know what's half of them mean still. What does FN function? Is that function?
Yeah. They all kind of have a purpose, but you know, like imagine first typewriter looking like this, you would be afraid to go near it. So they basically figure out one shift is enough. And if we duplicate it on both sides, then you can always have one finger that's free to use it. The right shift with A or the left shift with P. So that was actually early 20th century where the Underwood typewriter said, we got it. This is the layout. And they had left shift, right shift. And that's what we still have today. So 100 something years later.
Presumably also there's a new kind of group of buttons must have appeared. Because I remember when typewriters vanished and word processors... Yeah. Took over. I had an Amstrad word processor. So things like the return key, for example, and like cursor keys, arrows where you could move the cursor around.
Yeah, or insert and delete, like all of this sort of like, for the first time, the text was malleable, right? You could like do something with it after you typed it, which actually for over like a century, you couldn't, right? Like the moment you type it on paper, you stuck with it.
Although you can rub out on typewriters, you can get like kind of delete on type, which is kind of like got Tippex on a ribbon.
Yeah. So there was like the interesting part for me in learning about this is how much of backspace we actually take for granted. You know, like right now we can just type something, you make a mistake, you press backspace, which actually is bad name. Like backspace used to mean a space that goes backwards. It had nothing to do with deleting. That's why on a Mac it's called delete. But yeah, there was over a century of people trying to figure out how to make erasing happen in a world of paper and ink, which is actually really complicated. Later, there were typewriters that had sort of like a whiteout that was integrated, you know, Tippex, some really clever like chemical inventions in just making it possible because, you know, a lot of the first century of typing was retyping, right? There were all of these people, mostly women in the Western world, just stuck in those rooms typing over and over again because their boss wanted one word changed. Or because they made a typo. And if you're typing through multiple carbon copies, the Tippex is not going to help you, right? You just have to start from scratch. So I think we eventually solved the backspace problem kind of by accident because computers are just like naturally good at losing things.
It's interesting. I'll tell you something. I've mentioned my friend Will twice already in this podcast. I'm going to mention him again. My friend Will, who's a writer, he's a novelist and other things, he still writes on typewriters. And he makes the point of one of the dreadful things about writing is that we in our quest for perfection, we'll write a sentence and then we won't like that sentence. We'll want to change it and we'll go back and we won't go on until we've made that sentence perfect. So we can endlessly edit. And that's not healthy if you're a writer trying to be creative. Because the creative process, you just want to get stuff down on the page. It's really, really important. You get the sand in the sandbox and then you can go back and edit. And you couldn't do that on a typewriter. A typewriter, you had to be much more disciplined. You couldn't edit, so you just had to write. And that's a really good way of writing as a creative artist, according to Will. Yeah. And I agree. Staring at a blank screen and thinking, okay, where once upon a time, and then it's like, okay, the temptation to go and edit. Well, actually, you shouldn't. Yeah. You should keep going, keep going, keep going.
So I don't know if I agree, because I think there's sort of beauty in choosing whatever works for you, right? It's probably a lot more complicated because, so the way I write, I do exactly the thing you said you don't want to do, which is like I big space, I move things around, I select things and use arrow keys. And that's my creative process. But I also want to recognize like your or Will's creative process is also what you need, right? So I think like the, you see all of these devices trying to recapture the simplicity of typewriters in the modern era. Nothing wrong with that, right? But I think a lot of, for a lot of people, like word processing was freeing, right? It was sort of like, oh, my brain works actually like this. Yeah. I'm just throwing a lot of stuff on the page and then move it around.
It is freeing. But of course, with that freedom, you lose the discipline. I, you know, I'm the arch procrastinator. Thing, if I'm writing or I need to write something, I've got a deadline, I have to use things like Mac Blocker, which stops me using the internet. So just so I don't go off. And there's other apps that you can will not let you edit, will not let you use backspace. It's interesting how, is there such a thing? I mean, for you, all these sort of keyboards, is there a sort of what you would consider the best layout of a keyboard yet? Split keyboards or wiggly keyboards or?
Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, I'm sort of like we talked about before, I'm kind of in awe of QWERTY. Like, I mean, it's a strange thing to admit, but you know, there are reasons it's still with us. Like there were like multiple assassination attempts on QWERTY over the last 150 years, and it's still here. And it's actually sort of surprisingly international. Like that's the thing that didn't exist before. But now, you know, I can sit down to your keyboard and type, even though you might be in British English, or you might be in Polish, or you might be in German or whatever, like, or Japanese or Chinese. Like, yes, we lost some diversity along the way. There were some beautiful Thai keyboards or Thai typewriters. There were some really interesting Chinese and Japanese keyboards. A lot of the keyboards now, we just like, you just use QWERTY as an entry point, right? The way a lot of people type in Chinese or Japanese or Korean is like they describe the words in Latin and they become the right letters through the magic of computing software. And some people find it disappointing and kind of like, oh, it's colonialism of QWERTY, you know? But in a way, it also became this sort of like universal language. I think that one resonates with me in a way. I do admire people who try to reinvent it, right? I do admire people who try all of these different layouts or different physical keyboard layouts. And it's good that alternatives exist.
I agree. And also, actually, my hat goes off to some of the buttons that we no longer have. Things like kind of execute button and like a button that says rub out. And there's some really crazy buttons that used to exist, which don't exist anymore, but I wish they did. Maybe you could give us a few.
There's a button on a keyboard of, I think, a specific laboratory equipment that says don't care. It has a label saying don't care. It's, I think, about mathematical precision or something, but I'm just like, yes, I don't care, I want to press it all the time.
We should have one of those. That'd be really good.
I think exactly things like execute or even control on your keyboard today sort of harken back to this old way of really kind of nerdy computing, right? Like control used to be control codes, and it's kind of disappointing that it still made it. Like even backspace has a wrong name, right? As I mentioned, like backspace is just a space going in the other direction.
I don't even know what control means. I'm sure I must do it. So it's kind of like a shift or a cut.
It's this nerdy shift. It's this sort of like strange
nerd shift. I like that.
My joking answer, why is any key on a keyboard, it's because it was there on the keyboard before it. It's just, it's all like going back to history, right? There were teletypes with control keys, and at some point they moved to keyboards and then we stuck with them. So it's really hard to, you know, change something that exists in your modern memory.
But that's it. I think us as consumers, we just assume everyone's going to be, someone's in charge of the whole shebang, whatever it is. And so that's why, I guess, am I right in thinking that's why there are so many quirkinesses to the keyboard, the QWERTY, etc. Yeah. Because no one's in charge, and it's just evolved in this strange, slightly haphazard
way. People were in charge of like bits and pieces, right? The arrow keys are in this specific layout because of the company called Digital Equipment Corporation. And they actually did. It's a good layout, except when, you know, as we talked earlier, Apple starts messing with it. But, you know, like the space bar, the caps lock, right, is a great example of something that a lot of people find. Like, why is this in such a prominent space? But really, like the moment you try to change it, some people we're like, well, I'm used to it. Don't mess with it, right? So
I like that. It's interesting because in a way, evolution is similar. I mean, if you were going to design the human body, you certainly wouldn't design it like this. You know, there's things about the human body which are ridiculous, like having that sort of optic, you know, that's, the eye is ridiculous. You wouldn't design it like this. And yet it's fine. It works. That's kind of how evolution works. And I guess it's the same with this. Hey, listen, your book, Shift Happens, when you kind of wrote it, I wonder if you had a kind of, if you had a moment of sort of clarity when you got to the end of your book. Did you have a moment where you thought, this is why this is an interesting subject? What was your kind of takeaway kind of moment of like, this is really interesting?
I'm sort of a nerd, you know, a designer, engineer kind of thing. And so, you know, I used to be obsessed with keyboards mostly as sort of like the technical device, right? Like, oh, there's all of these key codes, there's all of these layouts. But what's really interesting to me is like sort of how, you know, again, we talked about how the QWERTY keyboard kind of looks like it looked like 150 years ago. And that's, you know, either good or bad, depending on look at it. But so much around it changed, right? How we use keyboards, who used keyboards, how typewriters became computers, which is actually like a really complicated story. There were, you know, devices like teletypes and key punches and calculators and all of this kind of stuff, word processors we talked about. Sort of the human attachment to the keyboard ended up being like the most interesting part, right? Like how some people, as I mentioned, like speak with their thumbs today, right? Which is like kind of a new way to actually use a keyboard that didn't exist before, or how some people were like became so incredibly good at typing, or how some people like we talk about Dvorak and other people like really wanted to fix the QWERTY's wrongs without maybe realizing there wasn't much to fix, but you know, like how some people try to invent a new language just to fix the universe, right? That's how people so there's a lot of like really beautiful stories of people.
And the phone as well. You know, you mentioned typing with your thumbs, because obviously when the smartphone was invented, things like BlackBerry died off, which had like a physical keyboard. But now we have keyboards that recognize what it is you're writing, and you do the squiggly lines with your finger, and that kind of works. Or typing with your thumbs. It's funny though, because I can't, like, for example, like speech recognition software is really good, but I can't write with it. I need to physically have my hands moving in order for my brain to operate.
There's this beautiful connection between your brain and your fingers and the keyboard that, you know, maybe it was a lucky accident that it happened with pianos and then typewriters, right? Like you can notice sometimes where you're typing and you notice that you made it, your fingers notice you made a typo before your brain does, which I know doesn't make sense because it's all your brain, but like your fingers will go to backspace before you even realize, because you sense that you typed the key just ever so slightly off. It happens so quickly in your brain and at such a low level that it's so beautiful to me, right? Like how well integrated it is. With voice, you know, you never get that. And there's also the privacy issues, right? People can hear you talk. And then of course you can also get, and that's like the strategy, you could get an RSI of vocal cords. You can start speaking too much and also get in trouble. So I think you wear out your voice much faster than you wear out your fingers in general.
But like you say, we're all different. It's funny, I have a thing, you know, I struggle with writing. I struggle to get things out of my brain onto the page. And there's a thing I talk about called the watchers at the gate. And the watchers at the gate are the things inside your head that stop the creative process. They stop the ideas flowing into your brain, and they're sitting there self-censoring you and stopping you. And for me, the backspace is what the watchers at the gate do. they're trying to stop the creative process by making you edit.
Yeah.
And I have to silence the watchers in order for the magic to flow. Not that the magic flows ever, but there you go.
The kind of beauty of, you know, the 150 years of history of keyboards that, like, you know, you have that option now to silence them in software or remove the keycap from your keyboard or do other things. And for some people, it would be like, I need an old typewriter to write, because that's the only way I can express myself.
That's my friend Will. And Tom Hanks as well, I think. Isn't Tom Hanks a great... I read somewhere that didn't he write a book about typewriter history recently?
He wrote I think it was a series of stories. So it was a fiction book about, they all center around typewriting. He's a huge fan of old typewriters, and I think a delight to the community of typewriter collectors, because he just drops by stores and sends typewriters to people in a way that feels also very nerdy and maybe surprisingly so for, you know, a celebrity, but it delights people.
Well, we were going to get Tom Hanks to do this podcast, but I was like, no, we need Martian to do it. So I'm happy we didn't get Tom Hanks to do this episode of the podcast. Martian, thank you so much for dropping by and for talking to us about this amazing history. And your book, Shift Happens.
Yeah, it's still on Kickstarter right now, but it's funded. So it's definitely going to happen. So you can order it there.
Wait, you haven't written it yet?
No, it's written. It's all done.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Don't worry about it. It's written. There's a lot of photos. It's all locked in. If you're hearing this after Kickstarter, there will be a store. So yeah, definitely there's a way to buy it, and I hope you enjoy it. Yeah.
Thank you very much for being on the show, Martian.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, there we go. Thanks very much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to listen to all the other episodes and tell all your friends, etc., etc. And don't forget, if you'd like to get in touch, then please do. You have a keyboard, various keyboards in front of you in which to do that. You can email us at patented@historyhit.com. You can write us a letter. Well, I say you can write us a letter. I don't know if we actually have a physical address that you could send a letter to. You could write us a letter and then take a photograph of the letter and then email that picture to us at patented@historyhit.com. Or you can reach out, as they like to say, to me on social media. My DMs are open on Twitter, so you can send me a message on Twitter or whatever if you've got a story that you'd like us to cover or something you'd like to say, something you'd like to comment on, good or bad. We are all ears. I look forward very much to your company next time. See you then.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
While I still have you, very briefly, if you fancy getting all of the History Hit podcast archive and new episodes ad-free, along with hundreds of history documentaries to watch, download our app across Apple App Store, Google Play, and smart TV platforms. Follow the link in the show notes or go to historyhit.com/subscribe. There is thousands of hours of history on there, including a documentary on science in the Middle Ages with Seb Volk, and also one with me talking about the secret history of the space race. As a patented listener, you get a special gift if you use the code Patented at the checkout. You get 50% off your first 3 months. That's Patented for 50% off your first 3 months. And if you're an Apple listener, you can subscribe for new ad-free podcast episodes within the Apple app.